What do you think?
I don't know, man. I think I just put them through the ringer, and now they're just going like athlete's foot. You got to let us dry out, and I don't sit that often. So even when I'm barefoot, I'm on top of them. Is
Wait,
this
are
too gross?
you? No, well, I'm. Are do you wear slippers at home?
I do. I typically wear like flip-flops
You're, wait,
and
flip
maybe the
flops or
slide.
zippers, like with tops?
Flip-flops are, what are they called? Slides.
Slot. See, I can't wear those. I can't wear slides because after a while, it get like. Athlete, where it's
A
like
little
really
swampy.
wet, it's damp,
Yeah.
and I gotta throw them away. I gotta do rubber mat sandals.
Can we just both agree? Feet are gross.
Like the world is gross. Do you know what I have here? I have a sty. You
Yeah.
missed it in the span between when we last talked and now.
I can only kind of see it, but I can
It's
see the redness. Yeah.
yeah, it's gotten better. It was all so bad, and it was right at the end of my semester too. And I was like, all I care about is that it goes away before my vacation.
Yeah, you
I'm
gotta look
like,
sexy in Hawaii.
well,
Shirt off and glasses off.
that ship is passed. I somehow used the sty as an excuse to not work out, and so I stopped. Do you see this thing? I can't run.
Yeah, of course not. This is really bringing in the audience.
Welcome to Know Your Rights. A music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to a very bittersweet episode.
Can we, yeah. So I think we've mentioned it, but this
We
is.
we've prepared the listener, but the time has come.
First off, if you're new to our show, welcome to Know Your Rights.
Yes, we
My
will
name
get
is Rob. This is my co-host,
Rob.
Colton. My name is.
Let's
We're
not confuse the new listeners.
going to talk about our artist of the episode at the drive-in.
Yes, sir.
Before we do that, this is our final episode before I go on vacation.
And me too.
That's, oh
Well, I
yeah.
mean, mine's a staycation, but I get to do two episodes without having to deal with Colton.
Yeah, with a certain stressing presence, right?
Yeah,
That's
very,
just.
very stressful, very argumentative, very negative. Can
That's
we just
what
be honest?
most of my friends say, that I'm too present in their lives, that I'm too like calling and texting all the time. That's most of my friends' complaints. So
Yes.
they usually need a vacation from me.
No, I'm a little, like I said, I'm a little bummed out. It's going to be fun. I have a couple of, are we, I, we,
Yeah,
whatever it
you.
is.
I actually am. My hands are clean in this one. No.
Yeah. So we got a couple of guests
Are
slash,
those surprises, or do you want to?
not really, not really. You're going to hear them when we come to our first ad break. I mean,
That's right.
that will be the very first person. So yeah, Leo from Bass Blown, DJ Brute, aka
Yo.
that obnoxious motherfucker on your airwaves.
Yo. That's exciting. I'm excited for that.
It's going to be very interesting, but don't worry, again, for new listeners and old listeners, we usually do a little hint for who we're going to listen to next. I'm not going to give a hint for next episode. I'm going to give a hint for when Colton comes back.
That's exciting. That's the only way to make my trip better is listening homework. That's
You don't have to. I mean, just when you
the
get back,
It
then
will naturally happen anyway. I'll be listening to lots of stuff.
I'll give you one quick hint. You're not going to have to do that much listening. You're
I
very
get it.
familiar with the artist. Yeah.
I'm all in, baby. I was actually I thought about every time I go on vacation. I think I've mentioned this before. It's a weird thing with me. Every time I travel, if I get on a plane, I have this weird instinct to buy. Well, I want to buy an album, and what I end up doing is I buy an album by The National, and I don't know why
Yes.
that is. I'm
Well,
looking at it right now. I'm going to
they're
buy it.
good. They're good. You're the one who kind of turned me on to it. And
I am easy to find is the one I'm buying for this trip. The National is just good airport music because they're very depressed. They're
yeah.
old man, dirty 30s kind of music. Dirty
Speaking
30.
of Dirty 30s, thank you. Yeah, this is Dirty 32. Or no, this is Dirty like 34 or something like that.
34. That's right.
Dirty mid
And
30.
I'm excited to listen to I Am Easy to Find in the airport as my wife and I navigate finding whatever gate we're trying to find, which I will undoubtedly stress out about.
Wait, you're going to walk around with like a, are you going to have a vinyl playing?
Yeah, I'm gonna have, it's exactly how I play music at an airport.
Yes.
Of course. Oh my God.
You're that guy.
Let's make this vinyl. Very clear, everybody. If you are interested in anything we're talking about, you should email us. And that is
Please.
At know.your.writes.podcast@gmail.com.
Amen. That is not the last time we're going to say that this episode.
If maybe you listened to a certain episode of ours from a few times ago, a certain band, Tool, or another band, and you thought, wow, I hated that take.
Yeah, I really just want the hate mail. I don't want the death threats, as we clarified in the Beyonce episode.
Which I think we absolved ourselves from. If you listen to Beyonce and you're back again, welcome back.
Yeah. And if you're just here because you're a big fan of At the Drive-In, which I think I've trained myself. I say At the Drive-In now.
You're likely over 40 and kind of weird.
And probably not too big into Beyonce. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know anymore. Who knows now? But
that's true.
I remember my first thought whenever I think about the Drive-In is one of my favorite shirts I've ever had. And I think a lot of people who got shirts from Hot Topic had the stereo from Via.
Yeah.
That is in so many of my favorite pictures, including one with Nicole from college. Nicole's my sister, everybody.
Yes.
I have that shirt on. It's good times. Good shirt.
Really good shirt. Funny enough, we're not discussing Via at all.
Yeah. This episode. Or t-shirts, but this has been Know Your T-Shirts.
We already. Yeah, there you go. But so, yeah, we won't be covering Via. We will be covering the main album, the full lengths.
That's right.
What is the term? LP.
Acrobatic Tenement, In Casino Out, Relationship of Command, and Inter Alia, which I want to say it that way because it's spelled out phonetically. Inter Alia.
Yeah, you got to put the pauses in there.
I think talking about their album names is such a great way to first start to think about At the Drive-In because it is, there's a lot.
it's interesting titles. But again, Colton and I are both musicians and we've done band stuff in the past and presently. And I mean, come on, I can't accuse anybody of titling songs poorly.
I really do appreciate their titles. And this is before the Mars Volta for Omar and Cedric, where it gets wild.
It really does.
But it is hard to do this without notes, which, as I've mentioned to my co-host, this is my first episode ever. I think it's the loosey-goosey vacation vibes.
Yeah.
I got no notes, everybody.
I kind of figured that was going to go down, and I got plenty of notes. And the kings and queens and in-betweens, that's for you again, Leo, who have listened to plenty of our episodes, know that I'm the one who usually doesn't take notes. And I got tons of notes because I want to send off Colton Insecure.
We have Freaky Friday. This podcast. This is amazing.
Exactly.
This is the best. So in the...
Who was Lindsay Lohan initially?
I don't actually... I can't actually think of that. I've never seen that film. So I have no idea.
Yes, you have.
I've never seen it. I don't know. We can cut this. That seemed mean. She's fine. She's perfectly nice person.
I'm only going to include... She's fine. She's
fine.
Just fine.
It's fine.
I'll cut out the horrible, horrible things you said right before that.
Hey, can I say something? If we get into our song of the week, I've been a negative Ned, as we will.
Cantankerous Colton.
I've been Cantankerous Colton. I have been, and I've tried again to go back to the new Vampire Weekend. I've taken dips in, and I've come back out again, unsatisfied.
But all right, so nothing changed.
To borrow a phrase from the public sphere, I've been listening to more songs from the Decemberists, and I want to say, we're back.
I think that this, because they have four singles out, right?
Four, which, again, and the four singles are very weird. Like,
yeah,
some of them that they've released, I've thought, I don't know if you needed to put, like, what is the Joan in the Garden, their 19-minute closer.
Beats me. I've listened to one. You've told me to listen to one, and that's the only one. I'm waiting for the album. Damn.
Yeah, I don't. That feels like it has to come in the context of the album. But from what I've heard, I'm excited, man. I'm excited for the new Decemberists record. The song that we listened to for this week, to be clear, everybody, is Oh No,
mm-hmm.
off of their upcoming record.
I'm very upset with myself, and I tried researching it so I could sound intelligent. What genre is that? Like, I keep wanting to say it's like a bossa nova or something along those lines. I just keep going off of, like, you know, remember when we had those Casio keyboards?
Yeah.
And I had all the different, like, drum beats that you can, the rhythm sections that you can bring in. Well, like, I guess that sounds kind of.
Well, what is the song? And this is something I came to later because I kept thinking this song has a vibe to it that I instantly recognize. And I, for some reason, I thought of the movie Monkey Bone, which is so random. I don't think anyone thinks of Monkey Bone.
Does that have
hardly
Rose
ever.
McGowan in it? That was like Rose McGowan and what was it,
It
Brendan Fraser?
does. Brendan Fraser and Chris
Yeah.
Kattan.
Man.
It's an okay movie. It's pretty good.
I
It's
can't
not
wait to
great.
Read the description of this episode. Join Colton and Rob as they discuss Freaky Friday and Monkey Bone.
But it's the song Hell by Squirrel Nut Zippers. And just to be clear, I had no idea that that's what that was, the Squirrel Nut Zippers. But it's like, in the afterlife, you will be headed for some serious strife. Which,
okay.
Is that familiar to you?
No. I'm assuming that it has kind of a bass groove, like boom, 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 boom,
yeah.
Boom.
It's exactly
boom,
that. Boom, I think it was like
boom, boom, boom.
Big band, kind of swing-ish, but also some like, it feels like Latin rhythm to it, like just in terms of the way that the drums are working. Yeah. I don't know. What did you think of it? Oh, no.
I liked it. I really did like it. I can't remember what movie did he say it was from again? What he wrote the lyrics off of was based off of a, I don't know, obviously an older film. It wasn't present day.
Mm-hmm.
But he just kind of said it like, yeah, like the lyrically, it was just kind of about somebody creating chaos. And he just kind of had the first lyric built off of that. But I like the idea of just, you're kind of implanting Colin McCoy's voice. Yes, that's a throwback. I'm still going with Colin.
Throwback to how my friend Rob doesn't know how to say the name Colin, but... Go on.
Colin Powell, I'm not going to give up on this. But it just, it's kind of just like transplanting his voice into this particular genre of music and seeing how it's going to play. And it plays very nicely.
I think that what I missed from the Decemberists from the previous record, and maybe I should say what I'm not missing in this song, is they're going back into, I think, more kind of folk structured song. And I'm saying that from some of the other ones that I've heard, not just this one, but Oh No specifically. Okay. It's a very, I've used this term before, very much a fastball for Decemberists, right? When they're using kind of more traditional folk structures and it's like literary references, right? Or cinematic references. It's storytelling, but it's also just abstract enough, these different scenes or vignettes that he's painting in each verse,
yeah,
that you can still get lost in like the rhythm the song has. The horns are great. There's been a lot more horns in these singles, including this one that I'm here for. No synthesizer, which I do not miss.
Well, don't get too ahead of yourself. We don't know yet.
If there are more synthesizers in the other tracks, but that was the I'll Be Your Girl downfall to me, is a reliance on synthesizers for everything.
I mean, that wasn't a bad part of, to me, of that album. But yeah, overall, I think it's a really cool tune. It does make me look forward when you said we're back. I'm all in on hearing some.
The Burial Ground is the other one, by the way.
Okay.
For other people too. That is the other one that leads me to think that, where it's just very, they've gone back into the more kind of British folk stuff. Like I know with like The King Is Dead and stuff, they were kind of dipping into Americana. I think they are a American band that wants to be a British folk band from the 60s. And I want them to be too. Let them be.
I'm not opposed to that. I believe the term you used before was a transatlantic kind of vocal style of his. I'm all in on that, but yeah, we need it to be a particular style of it. And honestly, can it really get any worse than their last album?
I think some people would disagree with us, but I agree with you.
I don't care. Those people didn't send us an email at no.your.writes.podcast@gmail.com. So I have to write off those people's opinions until they send them our way.
Totally written off until you write them down, everybody.
Exactly.
Well,
and then
good
trust
Lord.
Me, we will. We don't have big spines. Like, we don't have like tough skin. I'll cave to whoever sends me a negative email. I'll be like, you're right.
I was trying to think of what you're saying with the big spine part. I was like, well, mine's slightly curved.
Yeah, I don't know why I said
I'm trying
big
to get.
spine.
We do have spines. We are
we're of
vertebrae.
moderate height.
We're vertebrate mammals. I don't... Well, how about this? Let's take a break. We'll come back and we're going to get weird.
It's about to go down.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Baseball and Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Baseball on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Baseblown on social media and discord.gg/baseblown for our Discord. Baseball Entertainment, bringing you more than just bass in your face.
You want to take us back?
Wow. Welcome back, everybody. If you could hear the weird shit we talk about in between. I don't think I'm going to give you a maybe it was at the beginning of the episode. I don't know, but
I just like talking to you, man. This is, you know what, the microphones, the recordings, that's all secondary to me. I just like talking to my buddy about weird stuff.
This is very strange for me to say this, but that little commercial break conversation we had, I guarantee that'll be cut.
Real, everybody.
But yes, real. Welcome back, everybody. We are about to really dive in to At the Drive-In. And if you disagree with anything we say from here on out, email us at no.your.writs.podcast@gmail.com. All right.
It might help if I put it in the episode description.
That might work too. I'm fishing, man. I'm really fishing for compliments and insults.
I feel like we're mainly fishing for insults at this point. I don't think
more than likely going to be the case.
Oh, my Lord. Ooh. But this is exciting. So I guess I should preface this because I'm the one who chose At the Drive-In.
And I chose it your reason. Yeah.
Mainly out of like a need to prove myself. There has been an ongoing myth in this podcast that I don't enjoy energetic music. Here's the reality is nowadays that I think that's true. When I'm being totally honest with myself.
Myth is maybe at one point in time you were much more energetic.
Let's put yourself back in, let's say, high school. Ish years, like sort of like late teenage years. How about that? That's a good kind of listening period. Like, what bands are you listening to that are like high energy? Just go for it, balls to the wall.
I mean, high energy. Thursday's the first one that pops into my head.
Thursday makes sense.
And also, I think that At the Drive-In has a very similar soundscape.
I was thinking about this when we were listening at the Drive-In, all the bands that get influenced by it, and the, you know, At the Drive-In is a part of, I think, other bands who are at least musically doing things that are similar. Like, I don't know if you agree with this. I don't find what At the Drive-In does on a musical level to be groundbreaking. I love the sound itself, mm-hmm. but I don't know if I can always relate to them in terms of, oh, they kind of break the mold of what a kind of post-hardcore emo band can sound like.
I can agree with that. The thing that makes them very extraordinary to me is they can live in certain, what's the word I'm looking for? Micro notes in between the actual note. You know, they get away with bending. You know what I'm talking about. Like when you tune a guitar, you're tuning the guitar to sound alongside the bass guitar to sound clean with the vocals. They can just get away with not hitting the right note.
I think that's part of their appeal, right? And I guess that's the initial point I was trying to make is there was a point in my life where energy is all I wanted. And when we played in our band, my friend Sam, I think at one point I kind of led us down a path of like At the Drive-In ish. There's a song we have, God Was a Dinosaur, that to me, that's our At the Drive-In song. And like I wanted, and to me, it's really rhythmic, right? More than it is in the notes. And you do a great job. I think you are very similar to Omar in how you play with notes and rhythms and that.
And, well, that's just because he and I couldn't hit the right note. So you just have to have a particular energy.
And we were hardly ever in tune or
exactly.
on time.
And if you hear that playing in the background, it's a fucking miracle.
I guess my point there is At the Drive-In really does encapsulate for me what that period of my life was about. Right, which is energy. It was trying to transgress, like in whatever box you were initially placed in, trying to fight your way out of those boundaries. Now, that being said, before At the Drive-In, I'm always going to be a Mars Volta guy, because that was my first, like, At the Drive-In was the band I would always read about when I was listening to Mars Volta. And before the internet really became a place of finding music, there was no way for me to listen to At the Drive-In. Like, I couldn't just pick it up somewhere.
I think you're right, because, yeah, I'm not sure if it was before or after Mars Volta, but I remember seeing a live video of them playing at some sort of festival and going, like, I've never seen anybody on stage with that type of performance. And I think they have arguably the most energetic live show that most people from our generation have ever seen.
Especially watching, in the kind of music they're playing, I agree with you.
Yeah. Just watching Omar, the guitarist, former bass player, watching him just dance around, just shuffle his feet that way. And of course, Cedric, just a madman out there and having such cool little mic transition. Like, just he'll drop the mic on a beat into his other hand.
The video you might be referencing that I always think of is the Arc Arsenal live video that they have. That's still on YouTube. If people are interested. It is. I mean, it's, and those are kind of things that are kind of mythical. Like, people talk about it. I heard about that performance, the video of it, before I saw it. And it was just people saying, God, they just go in. And then when you're playing shows, you want to be that way, because it's like just total open and freedom.
Right? It's that youthful, like, expression of yourself. Cause that's something I've heard, you know, Mars Volta at the Drive-In Express was like, they're from El Paso. Mm-hmm. And yes, I said El Paso on purpose, you know,
great
and
music city.
Yeah. And them just kind of discussing how it's like they felt like there was nothing to do. So this was like the thing that was exciting for them. And I think you and I come from a similar hometown of, like, we're looking for excitement, and playing a live show, that was the excitement, where it's like, sound be damned, you know. And that's actually what I hear when I listen to their music. They sound like bands we've played with. They not trying to downplay the quality, because we've played with bands who don't have that quality of sound as well. But, like, when I listen to their albums, I hear, you know, our youth. I really hear that kind of energy, that live show surrounding environment.
And it's got to be said, too, I think, which is, it's energy, but it's also, and this is not meant to be a criticism of this band I'm about to mention, but I, like, when you talked about, like, the most energetic live show, the other band that immediately came to mind for me was Dillinger Escape Plan. Uh-huh. Which I can take or leave a lot of what they do. I am not really, as much as I enjoyed Miss Machine and, like, other parts of what they've done, I'm not a math metal guy. I'm not really a metal guy or a hardcore guy. Their version of energy to me is hyper masculine, right? In a very destructive, violent way. And there's a lot of
destructive is a great way to put it.
Right. Yeah. Self-destructive and just destructive. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of, you know, that's punk rock energy in a way too, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I totally agree, but with myself.
With what you just said.
Yeah. Even as I said, I was like, but punk rock isn't masculine necessarily. I don't know.
No.
Forget what I said.
I like it. It's just you rant.
I'm like debating myself now. Yeah. But what I've always appreciated about At the Drive-In is, it wasn't just like hyper violent form of energy. It wasn't necessarily just destructive. It was dancing. It was just like total freedom of movement and freedom of how they play the songs. Like, the rhythm section keeps that band in check, both on record and in the performance.
Sure.
They definitely do. It was never, you know, trying to seem tough. It was just total and complete uninhibited.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the exact word I was going to use. It's just uninhibited. It's free. It's just a freeing moment. And it comes across watching live performances, listening to the music. I hear just a lack of having to be so, you know, precise with everything. It's just, you got to let this kind of flow out of you. It's your soul. It's your being. It's not musicianship, almost, in a weird way.
And maybe so here's, as we are introducing ourselves, the band, and how our relationship with them, I want to go kind of true or false for you. True or false, At the Drive-In is a band that's really meant to be seen live in performance and not on record.
True. I think true. Because one of the more impressive things is when we talk about how energetic they are live.
Mm-hmm.
They're also executing pretty much true to the album. You know,
and that's also because the album tries to capture that live performance, right?
Sure. But what I'm more getting at is, like, we've played shows where I've tried to be a little more, you know, like, vibrant live wise, like moving my body. And all of a sudden I'm like, my left hand is not hitting the right notes on the guitar. So I got to rely on my energy to come across. Whereas watching them, like, they're right on the money with when they're supposed to, you know, we have this big hit here. Nothing sounds clanky. Nothing sounds like that moment when you're playing Rock Band, mm-hmm. you know, or you miss the, you hit the wrong note. It's just like chink, chink, quank, 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 ding, bang, ding. You know, they still execute the sound. And that's something that's always been really impressive to me. And yes, for anybody who's listened regularly, typically I won't watch a video of the artist.
Mm-hmm.
I had to with them. I had to watch it, you know, because it's just, that's what was so huge with them. And even if you read the Wikipedia, again, Wikipedia, go ahead and sponsor us, or, you know, send us a little ad. We'll throw it in there. but yeah, everything's talking about the thing that made them so huge was they played that show for like 9 people at some place in LA. And that's when they got like a record offer, because a couple of the people there were just like, hey, that was amazing. Sorry you don't have the crowd, but people need to see this. People need to experience this.
It's the thing that I think when you're going to mention this band, it's the first thing that comes to mind. And that also, though, makes me think about our conversation we're about to have as we dive into these categories, which is how that plays into the songwriting. And funny enough, the band that I think we had this discussion about before was Led Zeppelin, where I was the one kind of prompting this question of, where do we draw the line with musicianship and performance and songwriting? And do we see songwriting as a kind of predetermined intent and structure? Because arguably, some of the best moments I hear in At the Drive-In feel in the moment, very ephemeral, mm-hmm. right? And not something that's meant to be performed over and over again. And this is not a knock, this is just true, right? When you think of the evolution of At the Drive-In and Mars Volta, At the Drive-In is structurally, they're a pretty normal rock band, right? They're verse, chorus, bridge, chorus.
Yes,
like,
yes.
And they're, I think the longest song is what, around 7 minutes, maybe? Discarded sure. Letters Department. Like, there's nothing about them that I would think of as progressive. And so in that way, I don't think of the songwriting as like doing something that's just off the charts. But they also feel very different from like the other post-hardcore band we've talked about is Thursday. And they feel way different than Thursday. What is that?
Well, that's going against what I said. Because I actually feel that they are somewhat similar to Thursday. But they do find a way to separate themselves. And I think it's exactly what you're saying, Tori. It's just this, it's that freedom. For lack of a better term, because I mean, I agree they're not progressive, but they are progressive almost in that particular, how you were phrasing it is just kind of throwing me for a loop. I would say maybe it's just that they're fitting in a lot in three-minute songs.
And just to kind of go back to what you were mentioning with Thursday, I agree that sonically, like, they have a lot of the same corner as Thursday. Maybe the way to put it is that when we think about the Drive-In, and maybe the missing ingredient we haven't really addressed yet is Cedric, right? Cedric Bixler-Zavala. I think he maybe is that missing magic sauce, perhaps, everybody.
I remember I was going to be a little argumentative with you on that and try to push back, but I don't feel that way anymore, because some that when you were saying that in a previous phone call, it started hitting me that I'm like, that's really the secret sauce in most bands. Like, you listen to what the band's doing, like, this sounds good, but it's really the vocalist is going to take it, especially in this genre of music. Mm-hmm. The vocalist is going to be the one who takes it to the next level. That's going to be what creates the obvious thing to grasp onto. And so I can give you that for sure. And again, it's because, I mean, how nice would it be to just shout and not have to worry about the exact note you're supposed to hit?
It's hard because part of it is the energy that Cedric is singing. He is singing, right? Do I think he has a great voice? Even with Mars Volta, no. Like, it's not... But I do think it's unique. And I also think in both cases, what he does, and this is why I don't think of Cedric as a vocalist. Like, I really do think, and this is where you mentioned this, I'm making a declaration. He is one of my favorite lyricists of all time.
Interesting.
I love him as a lyricist, and this is why. He knows exactly what he's doing. I've talked a lot on this podcast about the sounds of words. Yes, there is meaning in his songs, and some songs have more meaning than others, right? Mm-hmm. Others, I think, are like tone poems, right? He is weaponizing language, and he is so good. He is better than anyone we've covered so far. I think Claudio Sanchez from Coheed is really inspired by Cedric and a lot of stuff.
I think so too.
But yeah. He is able to weaponize language, repeat words. The words themselves are an additional instrument. It's not his voice. It's the language he uses. That's why I love him, because I'm a pure lyricist dude.
Yeah.
That's my corner. We know this about me.
I don't think his lyrics would work as well if it weren't for the desperation and the urgency behind how his voice sounds, because he uses such like surrealist language. Yeah. He'll put together phrases that I'm like, man, if I heard... Like, I was complaining about it with Maynard from Tool. Right? Where there's just certain lyrics where I'm like, put that in a poem, don't put that in a song. Because it's just like the lyrics seem so over the top with what's being utilized. Cedric gets away with it. He can use some very, like wait, hold on. Like, you almost have to go and read it a few times.
I'm going to give a quick taste for everybody if you're unfamiliar.
Give an example.
This is,
I like this.
One of my favorite songs on In Casino Out, Transatlantic Foe. This is just the first verse, and I'm going to say it, everyone, not sing slash yell it. So it's going to even sound weirder, just so you know. Pet sounds filling pet peeve voids, black and white TV with the sound turned down. Is it mono or stereo? Lending aneurysm satisfaction in the fruitless gaze of your Mona Lisa lazy smile. Trick ourselves in portable stanzas. Black Russian throated on this guillotine cancer. How steep we are, but there's just no telling, just no telling. So. If you are someone who is looking for meaning in lyrics, like, yes, there is meaning. When I said tone poem before, there's this idea that in the language, like, I can look at any one of those lines. I can look at the way he's combining two words together, getting us to kind of contrast them or pair them, and I'll come up with the feeling. It's like when I teach poetry, right? And students are so worried about getting the meaning of the poem. And that's because, you know, the education system has forced them to think there is a singular meaning we all have to agree on, which is such an awful way to think of art. And what I'm always trying to remind students is, don't worry about what you think you're supposed to get out of this. What are you getting out of it? What do you feel when you hear these words together, right? Guillotine cancer. What does that sound like to you? What does it feel like when he pairs those things? That's what Cedric does better than anyone that I can think of right now.
I agree, but I think there are plenty of guys who write that way. That it's just like the execution seems phony. It's the sincerity, like I said, that's kind of what brings it to a level that I can dive into it. It's like we were talking about with, what's the name of the song? You were saying it might be one of your favorite songs. But yeah, like, dude, when I just hear him just shout out, I had you go. I'm like, dude, that's killer. I don't know what that fucking means. I'll look it up later, you know? But it just, it conveys, I mean, even on like, what is it, on Arcacenal, where it's just like Matador is just a bull in a china shop.
Oh, no, that's a...
You're right. Hold on, let's take a step back.
Ooh. In Alpha Centauri.
Yeah, Alpha Centauri. He says, Matador is just a bull in a china shop. Matador is just a bull in a china shop. I'm just like trying to dissect it in my head. I'm like, okay, the Matador is trying to mess with the bull, so the Matador is trying to correct his... Like, the Matador is just...
It's the
beginnings of like trying to shape. What does this mean to me?
And what I love about that is in that moment, if we're talking about Alpha Centauri, which is the opener, everybody, of In Casino Out. That is the kind of like pre-chorus slash. I mean, basically, it is the chorus, right? It's that little bit going into the more kind of open chorus part they have. It's so frantic in itself that it's invoking that, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know how they write. I don't know if it's like a Tool situation where he's mainly responsive. My thought is it feels a little bit more cohesive, but it in terms of how the vocals are working with the music in that way. He captures the moments the band is hitting in such a great way. I only disagree with you on the part of, I think the execution is part of it. You mentioned there are people who do what he does. I don't think to the level he does. I think there's so much linguistic skill in how he writes. And if I'm thinking of, I'm just going to name a band, Anthony Green. Right.
Okay.
And when he's writing for Circus Survive, I don't know how you feel. I think I love Anthony Green as a performer and a vocalist. I don't think he's an amazing lyricist, although I do think he tries to take on a similar kind of like abstraction that mm-hmm. Cedric Bixler-Zavala does. But I just can't think of someone who does it at the degree that he does. I think the energy is a part of it. I agree with that. Yeah. But I don't want to, for myself at least, downplay.
Again,
he's
though,
just such a good writer.
I agree. But again, when I didn't use the term energy. I use sincerity. And I think with Anthony Green, it's not as sincere. He's utilizing a similar, like you said, abstraction in writing and trying to utilize these words in a unique way.
Yeah.
But he's not pulling it off because it doesn't seem like there's a real, Anthony Green. It doesn't seem like there's a real purpose behind that abstraction. Like that. And I don't know.
I totally agree with you. Yeah.
All right, cool.
I don't have anything yet. I'm like, that was very well said.
But it's a very fascinating element. And I agree with you. I don't think anybody does it as well as Cedric. I think he pulls off that like I said, the surrealism of lyric writing.
But if you're looking for like something to grab onto, like this is not the band for you, right?
It's true.
Necessarily.
It can be very challenging. This isn't going to be always as sonically agreeable. They're definitely a band that's trying to push boundaries of mm-hmm. what you're typically going to listen to. And they're unapologetic with it. And I dig that.
Well, for a band that is always trying to push boundaries, let's go into our preordained categories meant to constrict a band into best and worst.
Here we go, man.
Sorry, everyone. All right. So our categories, everybody, if you haven't heard it before, we have our best song, worst song, overrated and underrated. The definitions of those terms change every time we do this.
Absolutely.
And then finally, worst album and best album of the four that we've chosen. Buddy, I want you to start. What is your best song?
So my best song, based off of everything we were talking about, to where there's just this chaotic spirit to their songs. And definitely, I mean, it is bridled. It's not necessarily just in just pure, pure disarray. But my favorite song is one of the most tempered and kept together songs, and it's Quarantined. That song has such a, everybody's working together. You know, everybody is bouncing off one another. It opens up obviously with like kind of a corny element to me with that little like lightning strike, you know, the Garth Brooks Tool little thing.
And the lightning strike.
But when that bass line comes in, and actually there's a song you and I have performed with Bar Lights, which means nothing to the listener, I get that. But when on the run, I think that's what you and I were probably, you know, that's what we were bringing out of ourselves, is a similar element, because the way the bass and the drums utilize together, you know, that like boom, boom, boom.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, and these dragged out drum fills that like, it's perfect. It's perfect. And the guitar, like I learned how to play this song yesterday because I'm that damn good. No.
Rag. Okay.
Yeah, but the guitar the guitar work is so cool when it hits that, I don't know, it's so dark but cool, that little arpeggio he does. And just the way everybody comes in and the way Cedric sings over it, that it's actually, after it comes out of the chorus, you know, he, you know, like Feeding Frenzy, it's contagious. And what is it? Here's a classic Cedric tour. I'm like, what the hell is the lyric? And it's not even him singing it. It's Jim Ward singing it, but the half triggle will travel.
Right.
Yeah. But it comes out and it hits again that same arpeggiated guitar riff that sounds so cool. But Cedric doesn't give you a chance to melt into that part. He immediately comes back in with Shouting at You Again. And I just think it's got the most fascinating energy.
And I think it's a great choice because, like, we've talked before, these best songs about, like, if you were going to show someone just one song from this band or this songwriter that you think perfectly encapsulates what makes them who they are, their identity, and what makes that identity so great. Yeah. I love this as a choice because it is everything that I think At the Drive-In excels at that these other bands that come off of it, including Mars Volta and Sparta, I don't think always capture, which is chaos that is contained, but just barely contained.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. And
it's in a plastic bottle. It's not in a glass bottle. It's where that that plastic bottle might explode.
Yeah, it's always just on the fringes. And live, sometimes it does just completely explode. But and it's the rhythm section that does it. You're right. I always think of Rage Against the Machine when that is such a like 90s alt bass line.
Can I be honest? Anyway, it's funny you said Rage Against the Machine and I brought up Thursday. Like, Cedric sounds like a mixture of Zach De La Rocha and Jeff Rickley to me.
Oh, that's a perfect way of thinking. Yeah.
With a little bit of Gerard Way, but I mean, I'm not going to.
I think in earlier stuff, especially, he's way more Zach De La Rocha than anyone else. I think later on, he becomes, it's more high pitched proggy vocalist, like more Geddy Lee than anything. But
and also later on, he does kind of dive into, like I said, Gerard Way. There are moments where I'm like, this sounds exactly like Gerard Way, but that's more in the last album.
But I love it. And you showed me the live version of Quarantined, which I listened to. And it's just a great, like, again, you can go to any At the Drive-In. I know there's that kind of famous performance of One Arm Scissor on, like, Jules Holland that, like, people are like, God, this is out of key. This is awful. But it's the beauty of watching a band who does not care necessarily, right, how they're coming across in terms of sound as much as it is. This is an experience everyone in that room is getting.
Yeah.
But it's also them with each other. Like, you get a sense, I don't know how they relate to one another, but there's joy in the playing on a stage together. That's
there's
contagious.
A little bit of that. This is for us. And if it impacts you, great. But initially, we're just trying to get some shit out. And their live performance of Quarantine, when they expand on that bridge and he starts messing around with the melodica, and you have Jim Ward doing some little like reversals on the piano, to where you could just see him like fumble around on the piano, and it's like, I didn't hear anything. And all of a sudden, a split second later, all of a sudden you get that reverse sound behind it. I'm like, this is, I wish that was on the album, but we said before, they didn't capture it at that moment. In the sense of like, this was a live performance. And if I'm not mistaken, on that particular album, they recorded live to try to just capture the energy anyway.
Not in Relationship of Command. In Casino Out
was one. All right.
Yeah. Well, that's a fantastic one. I'm
looking forward to yours.
I wrestled. I think the thing is,
same
when
here.
I want
to be completely fair, mine was not just a like, oh, it's clearly this one, but that was the one I had to fall on.
This is a hard one. Like other bands I think we listen to, I think something At the Drive-In does well, I think, is they are consistent in their approach. The results may vary, but the approach is there. Hard record to record, especially I think in, I want to say, Acrobatic Tenement and then Relationship Command and Inter Alalia. There can be a kind of sonic similarity that I note from track to track. There are some differences, but I gotta say, in that same methodology we have, Invalid Litter Department, it's just powerful. It's
incredible.
It's powerful in the way, and like, it feels obvious that it's like, oh, it's the spoken word, longest song. It's just meant to be epic. That could have fallen apart so easily.
I agree.
And I would say, different from yours. Yours is a great example of them like doing what they do best. Invalid Litter Department is probably the biggest departure that I can think of that they've done, and like it's turned out as good as it is. And it's also political. It's compelling. It's touching. It's important. And it's like that guitar line when he goes into his spoken word. It's so
boom,
cool.
Dan, boom, dan, 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 boom, dan. And even the chorus, every time I hear the chorus, it's like, bum, ba, da, ba, ba, da, ba, ba, da, ba, ba, da, ba, ba, da, da. I'm like, who can pull this off? The way even Cedric's singing it, that song is so them. I don't think any other band can pull off that song.
When people give them the emo tag, which, you know, I am probably, from the bands that we both listen to, so many of them fall under like the emo umbrella that it's not like it was always, I don't want to be emo. I don't want to be this or that. I think what At the Drive-In does in a lot of their songs, including Invalid Litter Department, where I think that is fitting, is they build into these really like open major chord, like, da-na-na-na, and it's just like almost this kind of huge jubilant opening when the verses were usually really tight and contained. and it breaks open, and the drum goes to the drummer goes to the ride or to the crash, and everything is just hitting you at once. That's really well. That one by one, everybody fell into the wishing well. That yeah, that chorus is amazing, man.
It's so good. And again, it's just, it shouldn't sound good, but it's just perfect. And lyrically, of course, it's fascinating, and a song to where, you know, you have to research it almost. You're not gonna get much from it lyrically, other than like things that kind of like pull you know, into the wishing well will be the thing that I'm like, ooh, what's he saying there? Because there's also times to where I've said this before, it's gibberish to me until a particular lyric. It's nothing against him, because I'm like, whatever, that's how your voice comes in. But that also, it's almost a bringing you back to where it's like, I have to listen to this again. I have to actually be involved with this song. And that's so unique to where not a lot of artists can pull that off. Or it's really cool to have that re-listenable factor to it, but it's not just, I have to re-listen to it. I have to immerse myself in this. It's a journey to get the most out of that song.
Yeah.
And plenty of their songs.
I agree with that. And I think there are parts of their discography where I don't think they live up to the hype that At the Drive-In typically tends to get.
Mm-hmm.
But songs like that, and I was like Quarantined, I'm like, yeah, that is. And that's where I can see, like I was saying before, I was downplaying the musical influence I think they've had. But those are examples of what they were able to accomplish. I loved it.
Yeah, not a bad choice. I almost feel like I want to skip ahead on categories, but I won't.
I know. Here's the thing. Do you have a good worst song? I don't have a good worst one.
The only thing I have behind my worst song, and I wrote down some potential ones. The only one that really pops out to me is, and I feel bad even saying it, but there's just something I hear in the chorus that maybe I'm wrong, but for now we toast. In the chorus, I hear a dude
trip on your shoelace.
Very nice. But
and now we toast. Oh, and that guitar line though going into it.
I agree. Sonically, everything is good. The only thing that bothers me is I hear a guy with a piece of paper in front of his face just trying to find a way to make these lyrics function within the song. And I've listened to the song enough times that I still hear the same, and I don't dislike it. It's just my least favorite moment of theirs. It feels like it was rushed and maybe just made faster, and I could be wrong. It's just that's what my mind's eye is seeing. Cedric with a piece, like I said, a piece of paper in front of his face. He wrote these lyrics, and he's trying to squeeze in as much as he can into a particular segment of a song, and it just doesn't flow that well to me. It feels forced. It doesn't feel like the best of a Cedric emotional approach. It feels a little bored to me.
It's funny because my worst song, and I have two that were competing with each other.
Oh,
my worst song is the same basic explanation you just gave, just different song. Because I love Now We Toast, but I do think when a song by At the Drive-In doesn't work for me, it's because the music and Cedric's vocals aren't working in cohesion like they should.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think, like, because their musical approach is so consistent, it's hard for me to be like, well, that time when they do the kind of sporadic strumming with the snare going with it doesn't work as well as the other one, right?
It's a weird duality to where it's just like, why is it this one works and this one doesn't?
Yeah, because I really don't see, and maybe that's also, you know, a critique, is there is so much about what they're doing that's repeating. But Ticklish on Acrobatic Tenement,
ooh,
it's the vocal, it's in the chorus especially, right? It's where, and I do think the lyrics in that one, I think they are maybe too close to literal. It's such a delicate balance to write like he does.
Mm-hmm.
If you get too far into the literal range, the concrete range, it just falls apart and it starts to sound ridiculous, which is insane for me to say, because reading lyrics from At the Drive-In or Mars Volta can sound ridiculous anyway. But I think Ticklish is where he starts to skirt the line. I want to listen to, let me listen to it again real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of those songs where none of it really links to me. It doesn't work like that guitar line. That it's too simplistic.
It is, but I do like the kicking in the. I just need to hear it again. Yeah, the kicking, that like kicking in these windows. I think that part has this really cool energy to it, and it kind of, it's again one of those lyrics that we've kind of discussed before, to where it's like everything else, it's like there's so many words happening, it's popping off way too quick. But at least that moment creates something that you can hold on to with the song.
Yeah,
but outside of that, I agree. I don't think it's that.
The one I get to is like he mentions like bathroom stalls, and the next line is excreting lyric or words made just for this song. So it's like bathroom here.
Yeah.
It's one of those rare times where I'm like, that doesn't work. That's a tool. Bathroom humor is for tools.
First of all, bathroom humor is just not for Colton.
But that's not a good lyric, and I rarely say that with Cedric, but that's not great.
Just how it sounds. It just has that urgency. And just those are some moments where it's like maybe the lyrics aren't as urgent, but it feels like it's urgent. You know, maybe like if you read it, it's not as poetic, but when you hear it, it has that something to it, that oomph to it, at least to me.
We have the same opinion, just with each other's best or worst songs. Because that's exactly how I feel about Now We Toast.
Understandable.
I was going to say, the opening of Ticklish to me is also basically Trailer Trash by Modest Mouse, which my co-host here said was their worst song. Unbelievable. I don't forget. I write those down on my pillow, so I remember them.
I have only, just because you said there were two, and I apologize. I'm sorry that I let you down there. I also gave them a 9 out of 10 overall. So
that's fair. Like that's fair.
They did fine. But I did have to say, Initiation, you could probably guess why I don't like that song. You were the one saying that you had two that you were wrestling with.
Yeah, I have to go back to Initiation. Sorry.
I'll just tell you this much, man. Stop spelling out the words. Everybody, stop doing that. And the chorus is interesting in the sense that it's like, yeah, I'm spelling out the word, and somebody in the background is shouting out Initiation. Like, no. I'm just...
Never spell. I think
I hate it.
Is there really any example where you like? What about Respect?
Does that work? Yeah. I've said in previous episodes, I can't remember the ones that I brought up, but it was typically not in the rock genre that I could dig it, that I could dig it.
I'm gonna try to write a song that spells something to see if I can make it work. This is a good challenge.
All right, I got you. Anti-disestablishmentarianism. Let's go with that, buddy.
That's hilarious. All right. Well, let's move into our underrated song of these four.
Can we go overrated first?
Let's go. Oh, you're ready. Okay, overrated.
My overrated was Invalid Litter Department.
Interesting.
The only reason I had to go with it. Mm-hmm. It's because there, I just know so many people, and I can keep this brief, and that's why I wanted to just cover this now, because I've already said so many really nice things about it, and you as well. But I just know too many people who don't really listen to At the Drive-In. They're like, I love that song. That song's great. And it's like, there's also a lot of really good other songs. And so I just feel like it distracts from other really great songs.
I see. My overrated is exactly what you're saying, but it's One Armed Scissor for exactly that reason.
Yeah, it's those two were the only options in my head for it. And my assumption was you were going to say One Armed Scissor.
But here's the thing, is to me, Invalid Litter Department, like there are certain songs, and we talked about this with Jimmy Eat World last episode, where the most classic answer to what is the overrated Jimmy Eat World song is The Middle, because it is huge. It is a... Like, sometimes I'm surprised by just how widespread that song is still in 2024 for people who don't even know really who Jimmy Eat World is.
Mm-hmm.
But that song is great. It's an amazing song. And so it's hard to think of it as overrated when it's, well, that's just what happens when you write a really great song. And I think with One Armed Scissor, if you're, it's like a gateway drug. Like if you like One Arm Scissor, then I'm like, then you're gonna love like the 20, 30 other songs that are like it, but I think better. Like I
Yeah, and if you notice on the Jimmy Eat World episode, what did I say when you brought up At the Drive-In? I said my favorite song is going to be Invalid Litter Department.
You overrated yourself.
I stifled all of At the Drive-In, and I've listened to them plenty of times before, but for some reason that was a song that just popped in my head every time. And don't get me wrong, great song.
We incepted each other because you want to know when we did that last episode, and you can, I don't know if listener, you can hear it in my voice, but when you said that in my brain, I was like, but Rob, there's so many other great At the Drive-In songs. And what happened? So we incepted each other. And then after you said, I was like, I should listen to Invalid Litter Department again. And I went, damn it, it's the best one.
So there you go. That's a part of it was just me going off of my own reaction, saying like that wasn't, you didn't have the right choice because they have so much more, and I felt like I was belittling the rest of it, and so I had to go with that. And I did have conversations with close friends who were like, "Oh, that's the song." You know what? Fuck all of you. I'm choosing quarantine.
I think it is a fair assumption. This week, we have landed on our typical definition of overrated, which is it's not a bad song, just overrated. But I do think One Armed Scissor, one thing I will say is I'm talking a lot about Cedric as the lyricist, and I think the way that chorus functions, it's so catchy. And like, you know, if someone knows At the Drive-In, they know the transmission from the One Armed Scissor.
Not away, not away.
That to me is, that verges on parody. Like that's the kind of song and chorus where if someone was going to make fun of At the Drive-In, they would write a chorus like that. And like the cutaway part with the scissor, I don't like it. I don't like the play. I like normally Jim Ward doing backup vocals, like scream shout stuff. I think it works nicely because it gives them that punk mentality I think they need. But it's too much. Like when you dedicate too much or buy too much into the metaphor that you're dealing with, it can come off as silly. And at some point, I'm like, I feel like we're just talking about a scissor. I don't scissor.
Very true. I don't know what the song's about. I just vibe to it.
Like there are songs where I can derive my own meaning from things. And sure, I could, like a one-arm scissor, like there's things where I could get to emotionally, but again, it's at certain points you kind of cock your head and you're like, eh, I think you played yourself.
It really is kind of just their hit song.
There you go, babe.
So if anything, it brought some people in who maybe wouldn't have been brought in.
Ain't gonna knock it. And if it's on, I'm dancing, man. I'm a dance because I
Absolutely.
love energy and I have a lot of it. Clearly, underrated. I wanna hit this up because I have two.
Okay.
Number one, you've already mentioned it, and it is really it's my favorite, and it should have been my favorite or the best song, but I had to go with the objective scientific route. Chambada, chambada, chambada. Oh,
So
so good.
good. That song is incredible.
It's so good. And this is where I'm like, oh, Colton Saylor, I love lyrics, blah, blah, blah. Man, I don't even know. I don't know
I
anything.
just learned what a flechette is.
You're the one who was like, you did all of this amazing research. Like, I'm not even saying it right. It's not Chambara, it's
It's not. It's
Almara.
Valmara.
See,
Valmara.
I'm telling you, man, I don't. This is the
It doesn't
song
even sound like
where.
he's saying flechette when he says it. Every time I read it, I'm like, it doesn't sound like that word. But
Kiss me with the lisp of your shrapnel caress. That is, oh, that is fucking perfect. I love that. Tour de force, de facto, ayachuco, ayachuco. When I was on my volleyball team in high school, I used to, like, this is weird. I used to sing before I served. It centered me. I used to sing this song and
That's
like yell
awesome.
it. I used to like sing. I used to yell it in our huddle, and like my teammates would be like, I don't know, but I love it.
I'm pretty sure I said it before. I have no idea what Iochuka or something like that, but like I don't know what it means, but man, I feel it. I'm with you, Cedric. I got your back. Let's go into war. Fuck those flechettes.
Yeah, and then all we are failed attempts propelled by stilt-like presidents. Like, there's a definite, like, I believe, right? Because Ayachiko is, I'm reading off of Genius at some point. It's a capital city of a Huamanga province and the Ayachuco region of Peru. There's definitely, I think, something about like military struggle, right? Rebellion. But at the same time, again, the lyrical power with the music kind of kicking in, this kind of more like super fast punk. Yeah. We are all failed attempts propelled by stilt like presidents, incarcerate the maze expense like flechettes. It's poetry in a way that is, like it's pure energy and electricity. But there's also, you're going to get rewarded every time you listen for something new in that song. That verse, the
It's so damn cool.
That's cool, man. That is.
I love when we hit those moments where it's like, I don't know what to tell you. Rad that you did that.
I can say from a songwriter perspective, and I think this is like with anything, I think we talk about it a lot with sports. It's like when you are confident, when you are aware of what makes you good, and when you just know that this groove, the boom, 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 when it's kicking ass, you don't need anything but the It's all bravado. It's so great.
Yeah, you got this. It's the Jimmy Eat World and the Sweetness story. It's like not too many people can pull off the whoa, 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 whoa in between every lyric.
Exactly. But my second pick is Lopsided on that same record. Because
that one
is the most emotional at the drive-in I can think of.
I completely agree, Colton.
Is that your underrated?
Yeah, way to have a second pick. I didn't know that was our...
You take it. You take it.
And now with Colton's second pick.
What are you talking about? You have like third, fourth, fifth picks all the time. You bring out a list. You go, well, let me read off my list.
I know, but you always
seem
to like nail my...
Walk me through Lopsided. I love you.
Yeah, Lopsided. I completely agree. It has the most emotional feel. It has like the... When every single time when he says, like, does it all make sense now? And just the line before, I'm like, that's such a good bring in. And yeah, it does have some lyrics there. I'm like, I don't know how to interpret. Is this just a life preserver or a bivouac tenure? I'm like, okay, let me look that up. You know? And from my understanding, bivouac is like a military like compound or something like that. Or
bivouac. Yeah. But it's the ability to use terms. Funny enough, we were just talking about this lyricist, Colin Malloy, right? Mm-hmm. The ability to use these really kind of archaic and totally just out of nowhere words that could make you roll your eyes, except it's the way that they use it.
Yeah. And I complained about it with Maynard, where he uses certain lyrics where I'm like, yeah, word of the day. It doesn't feel that way with Cedric because Cedric is like constantly dropping words like this.
Yeah, I have a, I don't want this to be, because I think I've well acquitted myself that I love Tool and Maynard. I thought was fantastic. I think the difference for me is that when he does it in some of the worst Tool songs that we were talking about, it comes off as, like you said, pretentious and wanting to be smart. And when Cedric does it well, it just sounds smart.
It sounds sincere.
Don't get me started.
I know.
You know what it is? I feel like I can say this. I feel like I'm ready. Because you've been using that term a lot. And it makes me think, with At The Drive-In, it's a great time, I think, to try to think about this. When we were talking about a band like Dashboard Confessional, for example, and this is me, every time we talk about a band, my number one goal, I don't always share it with you, but I'm always thinking of, what is it that makes this band at their best great as songwriters? Like, what is the, you know, if I'm thinking of a formula, something that they're doing in the lyrics and the writing. And there are times where I think both of us have just said, there feels like there is a sort of external factor we can't put a finger on. And it comes across sometimes as sincerity. I think in that episode, you said it well, you said with Chris Carrabba and Dashboard Confessional, it's not like he's doing things that are extraordinary at different moments. But there's a kind of sincere way in which he does things where it works where it doesn't for other people.
Yeah.
I always struggle with that because I feel like I'm trying to be like very scientific in how I impact some of these things. And I want there to be a formula. The other part of it is I always wonder when we're writing songs, like, tell me this. Do you ever feel, even when you're writing in an emotional way, like a performer? Like you're performing an emotion. Like, is there real true sincerity?
I've had moments when recording that I feel like I'm being a little too over the top.
Right.
Where you can hear me putting it's what I always said about, you know, Conor Oberst when I first was listening, that little like goat sound he made always sound put on.
Yeah.
I think that almost impacted me to where in certain recordings, I will put on that goat sound. Just sing the song, like fill the lyrics. Or what I was saying before with my least favorite song, reading off a piece of paper rather than just coming from here, baby, from the heart. Yeah.
I guess that's the thing I always struggle with. And I'm struggling with it because I'm writing right now. I'm writing a new batch of songs, and they're coming from a very, I think we both know what I'm talking about, a very kind of tragic, traumatic thing that's happened recently.
Mm-hmm.
But it's every time I sit to write with things like that in mind, I always struggle in a way, especially now, because there is knowing things and thinking things, and then an expression, I always worry, is there something that's lost in that? And so sincerity, that's why when we use that term, if you see me go, and I scrunch up, it's because I'm thinking about myself. Like, I just don't know. Here's my thesis statement. I don't think sincerity is possible in art.
It's maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong, but the way I could put it,
I want to be wrong.
Let's throw sports. Let's have a quick little sports talk here.
Sports talk.
What do they say when a guy is playing basketball and he just keeps shooting the ball and just keeps going in? What do they say he is?
He's on fire. He's eating up.
He's unconscious.
He's unconscious. Yeah.
You know, like he's not in his own way when it comes to what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of, there are certain artists who can just do. Like just be with that moment rather than like, you know, like for me, I'll analyze the hell out of my lyrics. Like that lyric's not good enough. I got to find another way of sounding better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's dangerous. Some of the best lyrics I've ever written come from just me writing, just doing. Like, what is it? There's a song Every Atlas by Default American, which I think are some of my coolest lyrics and kind of fascinating and create this really interesting social commentary. How egotistical was that? But what I'm more getting at is it was in a write a record challenge. I had virtually 20 minutes to write these lyrics. So I just did. I just was in a spot where I was like, just go. That's cool. Flowers based inside of gun barrels. You know, I think that's a cool lyric. I probably wouldn't have written that if I was like spending 3 weeks on the song.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's what a cool thought experiment that is, because you're right. I don't know how to address what sincerity is. It's intangible. It just sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't.
Hey, listener, do you think sincerity is possible in art? What is sincerity? This would be a great thing to tell us about at, what is it, Rob?
no.your.writes.podcast@gmail.com. I'm going to be so let down in a month when I'm like, we never got a single fucking
I'll minute. Email you from Hawaii. There like, I'll tell you what I think sincerity is.
I'll be like, Colton S. from San Jose.
Oh, my God. That is perfect. And now it's got to happen. Oh, man. So, wait, are we two albums now?
I think so, yeah.
Man, we are. This has flown by. It's just been fun to talk about these guys.
We've been a lot more like on the nose with what this podcast is supposed to be about as compared to plenty of other openings.
We're on fire today. We are unconscious, one might say. Well, let's start with worst album because we like to end with some positivity.
That's right.
And I don't think we can 3-2-1 this. I'm moving away from that. Well, I was re-listening to some of our old episodes. I just love being in sync with you. I love saying things at the same time. Mm-hmm. I'm like very excitable in that way. We're going to retire 3-2-1. You're going to miss it while I'm on vacation, I think.
Let's just put it into hiatus, like at the drive.
It's going on vacation alongside me. There we go.
There you go.
So I don't know, man. I really don't. This is hard.
I'll be that guy. For me, it is Inter Alia, and I really like the album. But this is almost me feeling like I can't speak on it enough yet.
The reason it's not for me is that's the record where I listen to it several times, and maybe this speaks to the reason why it should be worst. It's kind of indistinguishable. Like track to track, there are tracks.
Yeah. There are moments that were really cool. I do think that they put, this is about as much as maybe when I listen to this album, like he does sound a lot like Gerard Way, but there's also a lot of times where I'm like, vocal effect. You're putting a vocal effect on him. That's not him. That's not Cedric. And on top of that, Jim Ward is not on the album. And I just kind of, I know that he's not on another EP of theirs,
mm-hmm.
but he feels like he's, I wouldn't say secret sauce or anything like that, but he seems like he's part of it. And I don't even want to dive into why he's in it or not in it. Like, I don't even think that's fair to them. It doesn't seem like anybody said anything horrible about each other, but he apparently wasn't going to be part of it anymore. You know,
maybe this is a good time to drop this in, because I've always, I mean, everyone else has these opinions too. It's not just me. I'm not unique in this way, but I think it's always been an idea of At the Drive-In has all of these spacey, quote unquote, weirdness, right? Which I just, this is creativity of Omar and Cedric, right? And it's also grounded by Jim Ward and, oh my God, man.
Bass player, drummer.
It's also grounded by, I mean, Tony Ahar, right? That the drummer who's, and Paul Hinos, which I think, like I said, the rhythm section is fantastic. I think those three are far more direct and straightforward. And so it's the idea that when they branch off and do Sparta, that is that way more straightforward, kind of spacey, but not really band. And Mars Volta, that is Omar and Cedric free, unhinged.
Yeah.
And I don't know, have you, what Sparta have you listened to?
I can't remember the name of the albums. I remember I wasn't blown away.
This is, I hate to harp on Pitchfork too much, but this was something I recently discovered, which is I've always been of the opinion that Sparta is not great. Like, Porcelain is the second album, and like Breaking the Broken is like the big single they had. And it's At the Drive-In stripped of those kinds of Cedric lyrics. And
kind of Omar avant-garde guitar.
It really is At the Drive-In with none of the interesting parts. I guess
so. It's mean, but I agree, because I do remember liking a song by Sparta. That's all I can say. I can't tell you what song it was, because I liked it. I was like, yeah, whatever.
But I was amazed that their records were so well reviewed. Like Pitchfork, again, I don't know why. It's just, it didn't make sense to me. But and then Mars Volta, we haven't talked. We talked about it a little bit. Man, D-Last in the Comatorium.
Well, here's the thing. I expect us to have a Mars Volta episode.
That's a build-up, I would love to.
I think you can finish that sentence for me, but I don't expect.
Sparta, yeah.
Sparta episode.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah.
It's mean. I don't know how to feel about that, but that's why just when it comes to this album, God, I can't even say it. I got to keep looking back.
Interalia. Yeah.
I listened to it one time. B, I heard a lot of audio effects, and see, it felt like, why is this At the Drive-In?
And I guess that's where we can be really complimentary to Jim Ward, is I think what's weird about it, and I'm on board, by the way. I was about to choose Acrobatic Tenement for my worst album, and like you've done in the past, you've convinced me.
Well, and interesting enough, when you're talking about that album, I've heard that, you know how like there's a lot of more clean tone on the guitar? Apparently, Jim Ward thought he was going to come back in and re-record his parts. He was laying down in his mind clean scratch tracks.
That's so great.
And they just kept it on. Or I was assuming that was going to be your choice. And I was like, I don't even know how I feel about that. Or I'm like, if I was Jim Ward, I'd probably be upset. And feel like you guys have way too much power here. I was planning on coming in and redoing this.
But and I think that's the thing that stops me is Acrobatic Tenement, as rough as it is and how I don't always love everything, and it's not the full lineup that I think either of us really consider to be At the Drive-In.
Yeah.
There's that is like a sweet spot for me. It's another reason why I love 90s Modest Mouse. That like clean, frantic strumming, like kind of alternative proggy rock. It's such a like nostalgic sweet spot for me that it's hard to. And also I had to look this up because the drumming on Communication Drive-In, Ryan Sawyer, that cymbal work is beautiful. It's great. It's Mike Marsh levels of sticking.
I completely agree. Communication Drive-In was on my list for underrated, but it just felt like it wasn't going to make it, but I love that chorus.
Yeah. Interlalia, just to get to your point again, it feels like without Jim Ward, Omar and Cedric are trying to fill that space by reining themselves in. Like, I would have loved, I just didn't feel like that's the band that they are anymore.
Yeah.
To be that contained in kind of reined in, kind of low energy in a weird way. I mean, that record isn't really a low energy record, but it feels like it.
By comparison, yeah. It's not going to give you as much oomph as I think the three previous ones do. And Via.
Yeah, but I agree also. I was expecting to not like Interlilia way more than I did. Because when it came out, I didn't listen to it because I was thinking, I don't want to listen to Old at the Drive-In.
I was on the same page. And that is funny you say that, because I remember calling you and going like, that album was way better than I thought it was going to be.
I think when you're coming back from a reunion, you record a new album. Has that ever worked out where that's just like an amazing record? I don't know.
There's got to be examples, but none of them were popping into my head. Yeah. So that's how rare it is.
But also, God bless him, because it ended up pretty good. But I don't think we can 3-2-1 best album.
I don't think either one of us are going to be wrong.
No, I agree. I mean, we are the like most great candies, the nugget at the center
exactly.
is the sweetest part. Yeah. So, I don't know where that came from. I'm so sorry, everybody. I'm hungry, I guess.
I'll kick it off. I'm going with the obvious, like the most renowned one. It is Relationship of Command for me. And I was torn between two of them.
Mm-hmm.
But right when it started, I mean, and not right when it started, I think, can I just say that the best opener to a song by them, not the band them, by At the Drive-In,
mm-hmm.
is Pattern Against User. God, man, right when that hit and I was like, this is gonna win again. I listened to both those albums. Both those albums, I'm giving a little bit away.
Yeah.
But I listened to two albums the most out of this, and just this one kept winning every time I went through it. Just every song has such cool elements to it, except for Enfilade. That's like my least favorite song out of all.
Yeah, do you know, this is so funny, because that's the one with Mother Leopard, right?
Uh-huh.
I never knew this. Did you know that was Iggy Pop?
I just recently found out about it. I actually was talking with Robbie, my bandmate, everybody, the other day, and he was like, hey, Iggy Pop's somewhere there on the album. And it was last night where I shot him a text, and I was like, it's definitely him on Rolodex Propaganda. And he was just like, oh, okay, now I hear it. But then I read the Wikipedia today and I was like, oh, that's him doing that little ransom. Yeah, the little
Which
ransom deal.
I've always thought was annoying. I never liked that.
You know, it's I hope he wrote it and Cedric didn't. Because if Cedric wrote it, I'm like, you'll be what? I'll be the hyena. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That song's whatever. But every other song on the album I think is spectacular and just up to snuff. I'll take that bet. Extracurricular, I'm not that fond of.
The reason Relationship of Command didn't win for me is, I mean, I think it's song to song. And this is something that tends to happen with me anyway, where I think it could go either way.
Mm-hmm.
There are songs on Relationship of Command, like the ones we've mentioned already, mm-hmm. Where I think it's just the top of what they're able to produce in that period. I think on the whole, though, I like the way these songs work with each other a little less than my choice. But I have to say, as like a record of what the band was like at their in their prime, I would show someone Relationship of Command first before I show them any other record if I wanted to get them into At the Drive-In.
Yeah.
I mean, Arc Arsenal, I have to say, still, that could have been my favorite, but I'm trying to veer away from album openers as my favorites.
I appreciate you for that.
But when it cuts out and it's just the bass.
Oh my god. Yeah. Talk about like a perfect live show moment.
Ugh.
Like just imagine, could you imagine just the bass and the drums are going and it's gotta be Cedric. It's hard for me. I'm literally holding a mic, but it's gotta be hard for him to not just hold it out to the crowd. Like, and have that crowd shouting back, because like nobody on stage is supposed to be shouting that. That's supposed to be a proud participation moment. Which again speaks so much to the fact that they give us a live filling album.
I still think of in that video of Arc Arsenal I keep talking about, there's a moment where Cedric is just taking his fingers and ripping his own mouth open like at a dentist. People, I guess when you're of a certain age and you're wanting to feel like art is this free flowing thing and you see performers that do that stuff, that's for no one. The people on the stage, they maybe saw that. That is him bursting with everything he's trying to do in that song, and like almost ripping his own mouth apart with his fingers. It's extraordinary.
It
I don't
really
know.
Is.
Oh my God. Yeah, Rhythm Command rules, man.
Yeah.
My favorite is In Casino Out. It's the only At the Drive-In record that I own on CD and I listen to still all the time. I love, and it's the only record of theirs, I believe, that was recorded live.
It was.
It's a live recording. And to me, at least, that is, and there are songs that are rougher than others. I actually, my worst song was Almost. I usually skip it, so I got to remind myself what it's called again. Was Almost Hourglass, because
yeah,
I'm sorry, Jim Ward. It's not the business. I don't like piano at the drive-in. Piano and At the Drive-In don't work with each other, I think. But everything else, my God, that record. Like
there's literally tracks, piano on Val Litter Department, I'm just saying.
But it works a little better there. I know it does. But I don't normally like it all the time.
There you go.
Alpha Centauri, Chambara.
Alpha Centauri, just an incredible opener. Yeah, Chambara.
Napoleon Solo, pretty much those first
Napoleon
five.
Solo is so good.
I know, that's the only of At the Drive-In I know how to play on guitar, by the way. So great. But those first five in particular, just rip, man.
Well, now I'm going to learn how to play that song in 20 minutes.
It's like not hard.
But it's so cool. And it sounds great, yeah.
Ooh,
I still just don't buy it that, was Cedric, like, was it live? Was Cedric just like, he sang along with them and that was it?
I'm telling you, I can buy it because there are certain vocal tracks that sound overdubbed.
It was little to no overdubbing. So, no,
but there is
which
some, like,
implies that there was some overdubbing. But
I've always thought that I think it's A Devil Among the Tailors. I think that one I've always in my head considered there was dubbing because the vocals sound a little bit removed from what the band is doing. But at the same time,
that song's rocking.
Like the fact that like those vocals, it's like him trying to shout over the music.
Yeah.
That is my happy spot when it comes to production. Like my favorite sound on a record is like fuzzy, everyone trying to be louder than anything else. As Meatloaf would say, everything louder than everything else. I just love it. It's so great.
Once upon a time, weren't we going to do Meatloaf?
A certain someone forgot to record an episode and realized
that
mistake.
The Led Zeppelin. That's funny. That's so funny.
That was Lucky. What are you talking about? Why are you going to bring me back into this again?
I miss you, Lucky. I'm wearing my Paddy's Pub freaking shirt.
I've noticed
Why
you're not,
not
even Irish. You're Scottish. You gotta take that off.
I am Scottish. Well, it's from a TV show, Lucky. I've heard of it.
Lucky. How weirdly offensive you are. Oh, he's going on vacation with me. Different hotels.
It's true. It's true.
Different hotels. He wants to meet up for dinner. Yeah, I thought it'd be nice for you and the missus to hang out with. Lucky, I'm on my honeymoon. I'm not going to go there to hang out with friends.
Well, now that you mention it, I actually couldn't afford the hotel. So if you don't mind giving me a place to stay.
You could sleep on the beach, my friend. That's where you belong. Relax on the beach.
He's a son of a beach. All right.
Let's
I had
take
no
a break.
Idea that was happening.
Let's take a break and we'll come back with some good old-fashioned ratings.
Yeah, we're going to give you ratings and then we're going to have a weird sign-off moment.
Farewell.
When it comes to making the goings-on of the world entertaining, we got you covered. The Chit Show is a news, pop culture, geek culture, and music podcast hosted by none other than Danny, a.k.a. Danko, and me, Leo, a.k.a. DJ Brute. Tune in as we cover all sorts of topics with a very opinionated and wild twist. The Chit Show Podcast, where chit chat and shit shows come together for your entertainment. Tune in on your favorite streaming platforms with new episodes dropping every other Monday. Again, that's The Chit Show, a Baseblown Entertainment podcast.
All right, guys, we're back.
I haven't thought of this at all. I feel now like more so than usual. Like I'm usually like, oh no, I haven't thought of something. I have like a rough idea. I actually have no idea.
I know. I feel like you know what? Before we get into our ratings here, we actually now have a list of all our ratings.
That's true.
We do. Casey, God bless you, man. I get a text the other day, and I didn't look at it throughout the morning, and I finally had a lull in the day, and my buddy, Casey Miller, loyal listener, has sent an email. So at no.your.writs@gmail.com.
Fair.
Yeah. But he took in all of our ratings. He actually gave, as of before the Beyonce episode, Colton's average rating was what, a 6 point something, and mine was 7.5.
I'm trying to find the image. You had emailed it to me, like, or texted to me. I couldn't find it, but yeah. It's an amazing piece of work. Thank you, Casey, for doing that. It was also, when you first sent it to me, I had no idea what I was looking at. I thought it was like the amount of times that we said a certain word each episode. Like, I had no idea.
When I first looked at it, I was really taken away. I was like, that's a large list. What is this? I'm like, holy shit, this is our podcast. I'm like, oh my God, it's all of our final evaluations of the band and our best out of 10. And Casey, that's so cool, because I think there are going to be moments, because I think that that's the reason he did it, is you've had moments where you're like, I can't remember what I gave Vampire Weekend, but I gave him something like this, and he probably just went like, I'll tell you motherfuckers.
It's amazing how quickly this podcast, like the content of our discussion, leaves my brain, like immediately after I close the Zoom session, because when I listen to it again, I think I don't remember any of that, which is concerning.
Told you, when I edit down an episode, it's usually about a month. We haven't even said that at all to our listeners. Like this was recorded a month ago. What you're hearing right now was recorded a month ago.
I'm home. Like, when this episode goes out, my vacation's over. Colton, you're listening to this. You're sad that your vacation's over. I'm sorry, buddy. I hope you had a good time.
And Rob, you just got to deal with Colton again.
And I hope the plane landed. I hope I'm not lost in the Pacific somewhere. If I am, you know, come find me.
I don't think that this episode will come out if that's the case. I'll feel really bad. But yeah, I'm the same. Like, when I'm editing down the episode, I'm like, I forgot saying that. I'll say like, oh, this is my least favorite song. And I go like, I got to go back and listen to it. I don't even remember how that song went.
It was truly impressive and very great. Yeah. So thank you for that, Casey.
Yeah, thank you so much, Casey.
Now time to add more to what, when I looked at it, is a very sad list that I have very low scores for. A 0 out of 10 rating of all four albums based on nothing and complete arbitrary subjectivity.
Speaking of, just a really quick, there is only, I believe there's only one band that I have given a lower rating to than you. When we're in the episode.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
One band where your rating was lower than mine.
Yeah.
It was Vampire Weekend.
Oh, shit. Yeah, well, I'm done. Yeah. So there's two. This entire thing has just gone off the rails for me. Yeah, Modest Mouse was the other one.
Okay.
Yeah, you gave it higher than I did.
All
right, great. So here's our rating.
And now I'm kind of like filling you out. I'm like, I'm going to give mine now. 8 out of 10.
All right.
And I could maybe vote more with my mind than my heart and say a 7 out of 10 with the last record. When I say 8 out of 10, I don't actually think that what they're doing musically and from a songwriting perspective is like crazy progressive out there. I think they have really cool ideas that they put into songs. I think for me, what makes them 8 out of 10 is the cohesion in which all these parts work together. They have such a great knack for like how to go into a heavy part. Like we talked about, like the kind of the low end, the little bass lines, like in Arc Arsenal, that move into something that's really heavy. It's almost like a great director, where when you're directing a scene and like on the set, it doesn't seem like it's going to be anything, but they can visualize what it's going to look like on the screen. And they know how a moment in a scene is going to hit an audience. And I think that's what At the Drive-In does better than a lot of bands I can think of, is they are purposely writing songs for live performance. They're not writing a song to be listened to in headphones necessarily. Yeah. And that way they are like cinematic. They know exactly how it's going to hit. They're thinking about those moments and how impactful they're going to be. And it's fantastic. 8 out of 10.
I agree. And it's funny you say that, because when I listened to them, I did realize when I was listening, I can see them playing the song in my head, which is a really cool element. But all right, perfect. For the second time in the Know Your Rights history, We have the same score. I give him an 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10.
Do you want to try to guess who?
I knew this was coming.
Who we have given the same rating for.
Was it not Weezer?
It was not Weezer. I was nicer. You gave a 5 to Weezer. And actually, I was stunned when I was like, oh, that's right. Say Anything had a lesser rating than Weezer.
I actually don't. I know that we gave the same rating for Minus the Bear, but.
Kind of.
That's different.
Yeah, yours was out of 5. Mine was out of 10. We said the same number.
No, mine was out of 10. Yours was out of 5.
Yeah, whatever. Fine. But, no, Dashboard Confessional was the only other time we've had the same rating.
You These are the 7, only two bands 7. We fully agree on. It's amazing.
Apparently.
Well, I just want, this is now, after this episode, no one can ever say that Colton doesn't love energetic music, although from here on out, I will not be.
I'll say it. Plenty of times.
You don't know the songs I'm writing now. They're all bangers, man. Just total.
I'm pretty sure they're downers. Talk about getting old.
Talking about persimmon trees.
I went for a walk the other day. The next day, my legs were killing me.
Literally, that's a lyric. It's amazing you knew that. That's incredible. Just talking about aches and groans, man. Aches and groans.
Right. That's right. Well, here we are. We got to get ready for. So I told you.
Saw you on a suitcase and you were crying. Sorry.
What is that?
Beneath my feet, I felt the rumble of a subway train. I laughed out. Wait.
I was going to have such a nice, I was going to be so nice there for a moment and say, I'm going to miss you. And then you just reminded me immediately. No, maybe I won't.
The World Ain't Slowing Down by Ellis Paul. It's a great song.
I'm sure it is. So anyway, everybody, next episode is going to be me.
No, wait, and... finish your thought. We were going to miss me and.
Well, I was going to miss you. Yes.
I'm gonna miss you too. It's going to be sad.
Yeah, no, it has been such a cool thing. It's going to be weird. Well, I'm looking forward to doing this next episode with Leo. You know, and Leo and I are going to be discussing Mos Def. We're going to be doing 3 of his albums, leaving out the live one. And that's all going to be cool. But I wanted to at least have like the proper sign off to where I still give you our hints. I just wanted to still have that element of our episodes.
So when I get back, this is 2 episodes from now, everyone. There'll be 1 episode with Leo, Mos Def. Enjoy it. I'm excited for it. Then you
yeah,
have
we'll
another
keep it
one.
Kind of a mystery. Well, actually, you know, it is going to be Max, and he and I will be discussing Finch. And yeah, those are 2 of my old bandmates from Compliments of Apollo. You can listen to them anywhere where you can find that album.
Even if I give the waitress a few more, I'll still be coming home. Leo, if you're listening, I think about that lyric all the time. I love that lyric.
Is that I'm not as think as you drunk I am?
It might be. Is it wrong or right to think that I might have a chance at beating this?
I love the lyric. Leo.
That's a damn good song. I love that. The songwriting on that song is extraordinary to me. I had to say that.
Again, good luck finding it, everybody. And I'm certain that Leo and Max are on my side.
So now I am guessing 2 episodes from now, when I come back triumphant, I'm tan.
Yes.
Fully, I'm much fatter. I'm going to get huge. It's going to be definitely insane.
You'll probably still have the lays around your neck.
Mm-hmm. Aloha you. So is it Jimmy Buffett? Is that what we're doing?
That would have been a good one, huh?
R.I.P. All right.
Yeah. All right. So first hint, and I got to give you some hard ones to start off with.
Okay.
All right. First hint is No Way Out.
It's a all good right. first hint. Nice hard hint for me. I have no idea.
Okay. This one might be getting a little closer. Shiver.
All right, what's like stupid it. Is I know, but I can't think of it right now. I don't know why. When we this system of hints,
I typically my hints are I'm trying to get to my third hint.
Okay,
you know what I mean,
you're building up to the third. I was re-listening to the Jimmy Eat World hints, and I was like mad at myself. I was like, how am I not getting this? Like,
because I kept it vague.
All right,
Shatterday.
Yes, I am so excited. Everybody,
this is my honeymoon gift to Colton.
I'm excited. Are you excited to listen to Vendetta Red?
I've never really listened to them except for in Halloween. Our Halloween episode, I listened to Vendetta Red.
Well, okay, we have to. Now, here's the thing about Vendetta Red. What are we doing? We have 1, 2, 3, 4. We have 5 records, although
they include songs on some of the other records, right?
Yeah, so I think Blackout Analysis and White Knuckled Substance, those are before they're signed. I think there are some new ones. I think they're mainly songs that end up on Between the Never and Now.
What I was going to go with was Between the Never and Now, Sisters of the Red Death, and Kencionera.
Yeah, I guess we have to do that one, huh? Okay.
So the reason I was going off of that is that's all I got on Spotify.
That's true. And those are the three. I would say those are the three main ones. So let's stick with those three. So Between Never and Now, woo! Sisters of the Red Death and Kencionera from 2018. God bless you. I'm excited.
Yeah, I figured. I remember when we first met, like you were like, I love this band.
Talk about good live bands that I've never got to see live, but ooh.
I will not.
Well, everybody, we hope you enjoyed At the Drive-In.
Yeah, and everybody who just tuned in, come back for the next episode and the following episode. But know that my true partner in crime on this is the number one main offender.
This podcast is going to get way too positive the next two. Like, are you going to take over my role? Are you going to be the hard ass?
I don't think I have anything bad to say about Mos Def, if that's what your question is.
Draw a line. Yeah, how about that awful movie he made? What
However,
is it, 12 Blocks?
Max may have a tough time with me when it comes to Finch. I may have some things.
I have no opinions on either of those two artists. If I'm not recording, I love everything.
Yeah, no matter what, you guys will like Leo and Max. Leo is, of course, Bass Blown's, as we'd like to call him, CEO, and he likes to roll his eyes at me when I say that. But, you know, he's part of our podcast family, and you'll hear a lot about his podcast as well. So go check that out. Go check, as you heard in the commercial. I don't know why I keep doing this. He has a commercial break. He's going to be a damn guest again. But
everybody,
I'm going to miss you, and everybody else will too, I'm certain.
Aloha, everybody. Bon voyage. Happy, fantastic. I mean, again, I'm home when this happens, so I don't know why I'm being so dramatic. But I love everybody. Have a good time.
Malika Liki Maka, Colton. Malika Liki.